guys. Welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
Sean, today we have no guests. So we're going to be covering a lot of really cool topics. We're going to be discussing viral marketing, niche marketing, all sorts of good stuff.
This is marketing. That will be the title of the this book is marketing that we're going to talk about. So I guess that's a good title for a book.
Yeah.
From the old Seth Godin. So I've got a little summary that I'll go through some of the things in that, a couple articles. We'll even throw a little Satan in there. We'll get a little Satan to talk about.
Yeah.
So, you know, just the whole
Satan,
gamut.
Satan
the
in usual. 2020 and 2021 and all that stuff, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, just another flight of persuasion today. A lot of it around marketing specifically.
Speaking of marketing, Sean's got a little background going there. It looks like he's straight out of Purple Haze. Some Jimi Hendrix going there in the background.
Yeah. Yes. New lighting. Yep. Stole that idea directly from our former guest, Rich Sheffrin.
Yeah.
So I liked the kind of weird shadows it casts. And
it's really cool.
Yeah. It's like.
So when before we went live, he had a blue background. I like this purple background because you know what it reminds me of? Like every time I fly into Detroit, like you walk through, I don't know if you've ever been to the Detroit airport, you walk through the psychedelic tunnel. And so
no, I have not.
That look reminds me of the psychedelic tunnel you walk through on the way to your terminal.
Very cool. Which airport is it? San Diego that has like the lights in the ceiling that change. It's like swimmers and birds and all kinds of stuff.
Oh yeah. I don't know. I don't think I've ever flown through San Diego. So
yeah, I love that airport because it's super bright.
Yeah.
Like lots of light in that place, which yeah, San Diego, I guess that makes sense. LA's the worst. LAX is awful.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I hate LA.
So, all right. Well, yeah, we've got some stuff to talk about before we jump into that, though. We got some beverages.
Absolutely.
You may be drinking extra today because, you know, you were.
Did a little celebration.
A little celebration. I don't know. Is that stressful? Not stressful? Everything goes smooth?
Everything leading up to it is always stressful.
Yeah.
But the final day when you sign, it actually can be stressful, too, on signing day because you're. Yeah. Dropping a serious check down on what you hope to be a good investment. But yeah, I bought my third house today, which we finally closed on. So I'm excited about that. And
you got to get the helicopter pad installed and
absolutely.
All that.
That's
all
right.
That stuff.
On the roof. We're looking on the roof maybe. There's just not enough room in the back. There's too many trees and stuff.
So. Yeah. And you want to be able to get to the office quickly without traffic. So
The great thing is I'm not so for those of you who don't know, this is my studio office out behind my current house that we live. So we're actually turning our current house into another rental property. And but I'm keeping my office because it's way off. You've seen it, Sean. It's way back away from the house. So it's kind of separate. So I've already got a renter lined up and I said, yeah, sorry, man, the office is off limits.
Nice. Yeah, because you got your own driveway and everything for it.
Exactly. It's like almost most lot. People around here think it's actually a separate little house.
Yeah.
It's not even a part of the a part of our current property. But so that's nice to be able to have kind of your separate office away from a different location. And it's not and it's actually pretty close by too. So
yeah, you don't have to move all that stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That much less to pack
you
up.
Would know you as many times as you moved.
Oh yeah. We were sitting on the porch yesterday with Sydney, my daughter, and Tamara was out there and we were counting up and I think Sydney said, we figured out Sydney's been in 12 houses and she's 20 years old. So,
wow.
But yeah, so
it's an adventure.
She's actually, she's like, I can't believe people stay in one house their whole life.
Yeah, it is amazing. Yeah, that's kind of a thing of the past. Now people are more transient these days. So
So well, I'm glad you got that taken care of. I know can be stressful and the back and forth and all that, but
a lot of negotiation, man. But it's once it's done, it's like a weight off your shoulder. So
So I guess you won. So you're putting all those persuasion
that's right.
skills.
A lot of persuasion in it. So yeah, a lot of, I think a lot of positioning, you know, that there's probably a lot, we could do a whole persuasion episode on just real estate negotiation. Cause there's a lot of positioning. There's a lot of, I would say a lot of poker face, a lot of not backing down. And, so yeah, I would say positioning is a big part of it. So, and especially it's even tougher. And I will tell you, it's even, and you know this, I mean, look around at the market right now where it's a supply issue where there's not enough supply to meet the demand. So obviously in that case it's big time seller's market. So it's even tougher when you're a buyer, you know, on the buyer's end trying to negotiate with, you know, in the middle of a seller's market where they think they know that, you know, if you don't budge, then they'll move on to the next one. But, you know, just,
there's always that hint of doubt you can take, like, maybe there's not another buyer right around the corner, you know?
That's exactly right.
And that's what you have to kind of play into for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, what you got over there is a beverage here for your celebration.
All right. I have one. And by the way, this segment of our episode is brought to you by our friends over at the Original Craft Beer Club. You can find out more by visiting them over at persuasionbythepint.com/craft beer. And Sean's going to kind of give us a feature beer, but they're a monthly, bi-monthly club that sends you beer right to your door. You know what? With things opening up, people still probably want some beer straight to their house. So the nice thing about it, you get an assortment. They do all the testing. They pick from some of the finest breweries. Sean, I'm doing this without even reading anything.
You're awesome, man.
They pick from some of the finest breweries across the U.S. and bring it straight to your door. So, again, if you want to learn more, visit our friends over at the Original Craft Beer Club, and that is persuasionbythepint.com/craft beer.
All right.
So, with that said, I'm going to introduce my beer, which is not a part of the Original Craft Beer Club, but it is a Sullivan's Brewing Company.
Could be someday. You never know. Could be someday.
A Maltings Irish Ale from Sullivan's Brewing Company.
Oh, very nice.
That's right. So let me pull this up here.
We're kind of in the same genre today. How about that?
I need to play some Irish music. But this is this is batch brewed and hand packed in in Ireland, actually. So 5% ABV. It says the Maltings Irish Ale is a classic ruby ale with deep malt, combining rich biscuit and gentle caramel notes. 5% ABV. It offers their four world-class ingredients, which is their water. It has been filtered through Kilkenny's limestone base for thousands of years.
Wow.
Their barley, which is their Kilkenny source from their mineral rich soil and is all in demand all over the world, apparently. Their world class hops and also their cast ale yeast fermented four times longer than large scale industrial beers. So,
wow. So it takes a long time to make this beer.
That's right. So it better be good.
1,000 years through the limestone there. That's pretty intense.
You learn something all the time. Limestone is really important, you know, in the making of a good beer.
See, that's one of those little facts that not enough beer makers talk about.
Exactly.
So. Well, while you're pouring there, I've got one from the Duck Rabbit Brewery.
Duck Rabbit.
Over in North Carolina. So you've seen this locally there in Knoxville.
Oh, yeah.
The Duck Rabbit.
That's cool.
Figured a duck rabbit kind of made sense with our flight of persuasion today. Sure, so, but this is an amber ale, an American amber or red ale. So we're kind of in the same kind of genre there. Mm-hmm. The Duck Rabbit Amber Ale is a medium bodied beer with a lovely tawny copper bronze color. The lightest of Duck Rabbit's dark ales, the amber ale is a great introduction to full flavored beers. Mm-hmm. It emphasizes malt complexity with a layered caramel malt flavor. The brewing team put a lot of effort into getting this ale just right, and they're extremely proud of the result. Cheers. So 5.5% ABV. I don't know what the IBUs, but hopefully not too many. So
let's see how we're both,
Doing kind of a red ale today. Red amber.
So I got to tell you, Sean, I got to give you a little hint. There's a place, I got to recommend a place. I was out in Denver, Colorado this week, earlier this week.
Okay.
All right. If you ever are in the Denver area, I got to recommend a place called, some guy named John Elway has a restaurant called Elway's, and is really good. Steak, really? Seafood.
It's not just a tourist trap?
No, it's not. It's actually, you think it's like some, one of these places that has memorabilia and all the stuff of John Elway.
So more of a steakhouse.
It is an upscale steakhouse, but the food is amazing. So
I wonder if it's, so here in Austin we have Vince Young Steakhouse.
Oh, okay.
Which is I think he actually just bought and put his name on. I think it'd been around a long time before that. So
I'm surprised he had any money left to
I know, right? Yeah, I don't know if he even owns it anymore. Who knows?
Sure.
Like, could just have his, get a royalty for his name.
He's probably just getting a royalty. Well, that was what I was asking. Maybe this restaurant, because there's a number of, I think there was actually a chain at the airport in Denver. But I was just curious if, you know, some of these places probably just pay royalties back to the person whose name.
Yeah.
So
I don't know, I could see Elway enjoying a good steak and like being involved in that kind of business. Mm-hmm. I could see that for sure. So, all right. Well, I've got my pour. You got your pour.
Yep.
Let's give it a ring and a swig.
Look at that. That is about the same color there. Hold that up.
Yours is a little darker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yours is darker for sure.
Mm. That's got an interesting I like it. It's good. Not what I expected.
Mine's average. Not great. Not bad. It's a little not flat, but it's just not as much taste as I would like. So I'll give mine a 2.5.
Man, I'm having a tough one on this one because it leaves a little bit of a bitter aftertaste. Hmm.
It's like, I love it.
Initially it was like, this is pretty good, but now aftertaste is not that great.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to give this a, I have to give it a 2.8.
Okay. All right. Well,
started off good, but it lost some points with the aftertaste.
Well, I've got two, so maybe the second one will be better.
Yep.
Okay. after I've gone through the first one. So I saw like on a HGTV show the other day, they were talking about like white marble counters and they're like, well, what about the stains? And like, well, the first stain will be really bad, but the stain from the second bottle, you won't care. Cause you know, it's the second bottle. You don't care. At that point, it does not matter. So taste does not matter as much on the second beer as it does on the first.
Exactly. Exactly. So
drink your fine beers first and then your cheap beers.
There you go.
Second, third, fourth. All right. So where do we want to dive in and start with our smorgasbord, our flight of persuasion today?
I tell you what, you go first with the one of your topics, whether it's viral or.
I'm going to go with, I'll dive into the book summary, This is Marketing, from Seth Godin.
Ah, good place to start. Love Seth.
So he covers a lot of the things that we've talked about before in this show. I mean, he's been a listener for a while, so he's picking up on what we're laying down.
Absolutely. That's what he bases all of his blogs off of our
all content. His blogs and books, 100% off our content.
Sure.
And we're cool with it. We're not going to press charges or anything.
No. We get a little royalty, you know.
Yeah. Pays for the beer. So he's one of his first books was a marketing book, like a real marketing book. All marketers are liars or something like that.
Yeah.
And then he changed the name of it. So this is the book, This Is Marketing. And I don't know when it came out, because this is from the summary service that I use, readit4.me. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to go, I just highlighted some stuff because when you texted me earlier, we're like, what are we going to talk about today? And I was like, I don't know, I'll find something. So here we are. A couple hours later, a little research, and we're here.
Stack of stuff.
Yeah. So I like the way he summarized like marketing. He said, you know, first he says marketing's all around us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's everywhere these days. But he says marketing has changed, but we keep repeating the old fashioned tricks that don't work anymore. Mm. And then he defines marketing in his terms. And he says, marketing is the generous act of helping someone solve their problem. And then he goes on to say, effective marketing is about understanding our customers' worldview and desires so we can connect with them, mm-hmm. creating honest stories that resonate and spread and offer solution. It's time to stop looking for shortcuts and time to start insisting on a long, viable path instead. And then I can tell you, I 100% agree with that just because running the agency I am right now, like it is getting harder and harder to get short-term marketing results.
Yeah.
It's getting expensive to do that. And it's just getting, and it's getting almost impossible because a lot of the platforms, they want you to play a long-term game, mm-hmm. even in your marketing on their platform, because then it's more of a nurturing, gets people coming back. Sure. If they're engaging with you as a brand,
right.
They keep coming back to the platform, just like if they were engaging, you know, with, if you were engaging with another person. Yep. So that makes complete sense mm-hmm. to me. So that was, we've said that in different ways a lot of times, but it was good to hear Seth picking up on that. So, but he says there's 5 steps to marketing.
Okay.
So this is a little bit different than maybe what, the way we've said it, or a lot of people have said it in the past, and it's all very common sense, but at the same time, it's just good to hear kind of a new, kind of a little bit fresher way. So he says the first step is to invent a thing worth making with a story worth telling mm. and a contribution worth talking about. I mean, you could do a whole show just on that, right? Yeah. So like and a story worth telling. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's a lot of products that you can make and be a good product, but if you don't have a good story to go with it, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to fall deaf in today's marketplace. Like, yeah. there's too many other options. And then the second step is design and build it in a way that a few people will particularly benefit from and care about it. So a big thing he talks about in this book is you really only want to market, I'll skip around here a little bit, he says, who is this for? What's the minimum number of people you would need to influence to make it worth the effort for your product, right? So he talks about the smallest viable market. What's the smallest group of people you could go after and still make the marketing effort worthwhile? Mm-hmm. That's who you want to go after.
Yeah.
Yep. Instead of, you know, it kind of goes back, and he mentions in this book, he mentions the old 1,000 true fans from Kevin Kelly and how that's more true than ever.
Yeah.
Then he says the third step is to tell a story that matches the built-in narrative and dreams of the tiny group of people, the smallest viable market. The fourth step is spread the word. And the fifth step is often overlooked. It's to show up regularly, consistently, and generously for years and years.
Mm. Yeah.
And I know that is terrifying to some direct marketers out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
who kind of, we've been in this one funnel away mindset where you can make all your money on the first day with mm-hmm. cold traffic. And while there's some truth to that, those days are getting harder and harder.
It is. It really is. I mean, you remember the days of the big epic, you know, the lead up to the big launch, you know, of all these products, and it comes and goes. They take home, you know, take in bags of money that, you know, that first launch, and then it kind of, you know, fizzles over time. But it was all about the launch, you know.
Yeah. And you got it from, you know, 15 marketers that you followed, you know, and like they were all pitching the same thing, absolutely. Competing against each other for the affiliate prizes. And what's crazy is I know somebody who she does Facebook ads now, but she used to be like a launch manager for some of those big affiliate things. Yep. And the math is not as good as even back then. It wasn't as good as what you think it was. You know, if they do $2 or $3 or $4 million, well, half right off the bat goes to affiliates. Mm-hmm. And then another 20-30% goes to marketing and setup cost. And there's usually a 6 to 9 month buildup internally, you know, just to get everything lined up, to get the product designed, to get the marketing right, to get the affiliates lined up and all the stuff that goes into it. So, you know, it sounds like oh, we did $3 million in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Plus 6 months of planning, plus the help of your friends.
Sure. Yeah.
And then building their list. Like, and that, you know, that's kind of where this whole myth of like easy money, quick money online kind of got its hold. And
sure,
I liked it in this. Seth is saying, this is a long-term game. Like, you need to be willing to go at it for years and years. So that's why you got to find that small viable market that will immediately kind of hit. Mm-hmm. And then you can expand the market from there.
Sure.
Over time.
Absolutely.
Which means more content. It means more, you know, more storytelling over a longer period of time, mm-hmm. You know, before you're asking for money. So there's some of the big things. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff, but I don't want to take all the time here. If something else jumps out as we're talking,
yeah,
I'll pull it back in.
So I was interviewing, that kind of reminds me of a company I was interviewing today on a podcast earlier this morning, that a company on one of my composite shows, but they're a company that makes equipment for in the composite space. And, you know, they're, you know, telling your story is so important, but mm-hmm. we went through an entire interview, and at the end of the interview, you know, obviously they were, you know, touting their benefits and their advantages and things like that, which was great and everything. But at the end of the interview, when we weren't recording, you know, he just happened to say, and you know, he mentioned that, oh, by the way, you know, our equipment's used by Tesla. I'm like, what? I'm like, why did we not have that included in our podcast? And yeah. I'm like, this is, you know, cause that's part of your story. That was like, that's a significant part of your story. Cause that lends to a lot of your credibility.
Yeah. A little third party proof there. And
exactly.
Yeah. Association.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just like, it was just like, by the way,
did he say why he didn't cover it, or to him it was not a big deal?
I think he actually just forgot. I don't think he didn't think it was unimportant. I think he just forgot that we
didn't. It just wasn't like a crafted part of his narrative.
Yeah, and to me that should have been like at the forefront, like in doing a podcast when you're telling your story is like at the forefront of this, like our equipment was used in the process of these Tesla, I think it was like a Tesla battery. Mm-hmm. That they use to apply this particular chemical in that in the, I guess, the surrounding part of the battery. But
yeah, so I mean, imagine like the different, like what was the title of the podcast? Do you remember what y'all came up with? Or
I haven't titled it yet because it hadn't been published. So
yeah,
it won't be published till next week. So,
but imagine if it had been like, you know, the team that helped Tesla get more out of their battery. Mm-hmm. Right. Like,
right.
You're going to read that even if you're not interested in composites. Cause that's absolutely. Like, if you like Tesla, you're going to read about it. If you like any, you know,
yeah,
you're just an Elon Musk fan, right. You know, all that kind of stuff. And
right.
So yeah, those little, and as a copywriter, like I deal with that with clients all the time. They, they overlook those little details cause they don't think it's a huge deal.
Right.
But just, you know, one little piece of data like that in a good copywriter's hands can really be used to, you know, like you said, build credibility, mm-hmm. Have that third party proof, start a story that you want to know the rest of.
Yeah.
All kinds of things.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you say, oh, by the way, and you leave, you know, and then you follow it by something important like that, you've made a pretty big mistake there.
Yeah. Like, unless you're doing it very intentionally.
Sure. Like the Steve Jobs.
Or the Columbo method. Yeah.
By the way. There's one more thing.
Yeah. I mean, if I was doing a sales presentation, sure, maybe I'd do that on purpose, but right, that just goes to show though, that he doesn't have like a clear narrative for when he does show up on podcasts,
mm-hmm, right,
you know, of like kind of how to position and really grab people's attention, all that kind of stuff. And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, Seth Godin's talked about in this book, you know, having a story, mm-hmm, that really matches with people's worldviews and things like that, you know? So, totally.
Yeah. What is the name? So is that, that's his, out of his latest book, right? This is Marketing.
This is Marketing. Yes. Yeah. So interesting. I guess that's the latest, but he writes so much stuff. I can't keep track.
A ton of books. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I've gotten like almost all of them, but.
So this was another thing that I thought was interesting. I'll go to this. He talks about semiotics, symbols, and vernacular. So he says, busy people scan instead of study, which we know, right? Mm-hmm. That's why you use subheads in your copy, sure, you know, good imagery in your copy. Mm-hmm. But he says, this means that the logo you use, the stories you tell, and the appearance of your work all matter. Mm-hmm. Symbols have different meanings for different people. Send a signal that is specific to your audience and they will trust you. And we've talked about this, you know, with a couple of our neuroscience guys that have been on, and how, can't remember his name, but he came on, he talked about, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, as they've studied specifically neuroscience and marketing, how much logos matter, how much colors matter. Like we've always kind of known it, but now they're like seeing exactly how it shows up in the brain. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason most fast food companies use red. And there's a reason most corporate, you know, Fortune 500 companies use blue, and, you know, banks have certain colors. Like there's a reason for all that, you know, cause it hits a certain part of your brain a certain way. And you know, I think that's an area where a lot of small businesses don't do a good job, is really getting their symbology correct. Mm-hmm. You're starting to see it more and more. I mean, you know, ClickFunnels did a great job of it with their culture and their, all that kind of stuff. Wake Up Warrior did a great job with it. They really did, you know, I think brought a lot of people into that world with their branding.
Yeah.
But you know, now you're starting to see, it's just really, we can take in RC, you know, my friend who's been on here, he's big, he's dyslexic. So he a lot of times will talk in pictures and things like that when he does presentations. Mm-hmm. It's also why he learned to invest the way he does, because he looks at charts. He doesn't look at stories from newsletter companies, right? So, because it's very hard for him to read those.
Sure.
So your brain can process a lot more information as a picture than it can, a lot faster than it can text. So the more you can put out symbols and icons and colors and all those kind of things, you know, the quicker you can let people know if it's for them.
Yep. Yep. Very cool.
So you have speaking of St. Patrick's Day, mm-hmm, you sent me the cover, a little picture of a newsletter from Ben.
Yep.
Ben Settle.
Okay. So if you're not on his email players newsletter list, which I recently went back to just because I wanted to.
And you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly. But it's really good because he gives, I love how he delivers it too, because he's like, he's big into old school, you know, physical newsletter, which you rarely see anymore in this day, you know, in the digital age, but it comes in a FedEx envelope. It's hand delivered to your door. Like, I mean, you know, with all the markings, just like old Dan Kennedy-esque, you know, style. But yeah, I mean, he does a fantastic job with this. You know, just the way he positions it and packages it, you know, we talked about packaging recently, but, so his latest one, and I was going to tell you, I'm not going to go through all of these, but some of these he mentioned, this is the, for this latest newsletter, he talks about the backdoor list building methods that can make you the luckiest son of a business. I like his wordplay, son of a business on the planet.
Yeah.
So he goes through several, and these are building your list, like reaching out, how to really set yourself up. And without going through all of these, one that really stuck out in my mind is like, in this age of podcasting, uh-huh, is you know, reaching out to podcasters this day, you know, like kind of like what we do. We interview a lot of, you know, we have a lot of guests on our show. Right. And having guests, like if you're going to reach out to some of the big players, like in the podcasting industry and contact them, you know, we're kind of like, I wouldn't say I, you know, our podcast isn't on that level, obviously, right. But if you're reaching out to some of the big players and you're really wanting to build your list, there's a way that he talks about doing that, because a lot of these podcasters need specifics. You know, they won't talk to you if you're just very general. And I've seen this, you know, in putting out queries where we get, you know, I talked about it, like some of the copy is just terrible when people respond to these queries. But he talks about offering like very specific information. So let me pull this up. Let me give you an example.
I've got an example when you're done.
Okay.
To remind me.
So he calls this podcast blitzing.
Okay.
He goes, this is one of the main ways I get extremely qualified upstream leads on my email list, but it goes beyond just waiting for podcasters to find me. He says in I'm going to skip ahead. Let's see here. He says, specifically, I put together a simple old school Hartoonian style press release to tell podcasters what I know about. I have a network of podcasters whose shows I've been on, and I simply whip out this press release. And he gives an example of the press release. So I'm going to show you an example of this. This is killer because it reads just like copy.
Well, yeah, I mean... I haven't heard Paul Hartoonian's name in a while. He's the guy that literally sold the Brooklyn Bridge, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
That's like some of the first direct response stuff I came across now that I think about
really?
It. Like I think I heard of Paul Hartoonian before I heard of Dan Kennedy.
So this is an example of his one of his press releases that he'll send out to podcasters. In the headline, former Navy nuclear engineer reveals secret backdoor ways to steal traffic from big tech platforms without breaking the law. Does that get your attention?
There's a lot going on there. Yeah. There's a lot, like, depending on who you are,
yeah,
you might key in on the Navy thing. You might key in on big tech platforms. You might key in on stealing through back doors. Like, yeah, there's a lot of entry points there, mm-hmm. a lot of open loops that you're like,
whoa, yeah, I got to find out more.
Yeah, exactly.
So he follows it up from the headline. He says, big tech platforms have been attacking small businesses left and right by raising fees, creating sales choking rules, and deplatforming brands for the flimsiest of reasons. But if you know where the cracks are in these platforms, you can siphon the best leads from them without spending any money or breaking any of their rules. So that's another, I mean, that just kind of,
if you listen to the copy, you can hear the very visual words that he uses. Yep. So if you reread that first sentence, go ahead and reread the first sentence.
Yeah. Cause all of us have felt this. If you've done any type of Facebook advertising, people have been, you know, their ads have been slapped down and for whatever reason, some people have been deplatformed, but I'll reread this. Big tech platforms have been attacking small businesses left and right by raising fees.
The word attacking is very visual.
Sure.
Right?
Oh yeah. You can picture.
Like you can think of, you know, the movie 300 or any other military war type movie, mm-hmm. right? You get an image in your head. Yep. And this is a little nuance that I think a lot of people who are new to copy or don't really study copy mm-hmm. or writing in general really miss out on. Yep. Like, this is probably the second or third pass, or for Ben, you know, he's been doing it long enough. Maybe he gets that in the first pass, but yeah. Where you substitute those verbs. Mm-hmm. So attacking, keep going. There was like three other words there that were just like very visual for me.
Notice he says left and right. So there's a couple of ways you can look at that. You know, that's a kind of we use that in conversation, attack left and mm-hmm. right.
Yeah.
But in this day and age where everything's political, we can mm-hmm. also associate that because it seems like this day and age, everybody's on one side of the political aisle, left or right. So he uses that left and right by raising fees, creating sales choking rules, and deplatforming brands for the flimsiest of reasons.
Yeah, so you got choking, flimsy, you know, and then he goes in the next sentence, he's like, you know,
if you know where the cracks in the platforms are.
So you can literally in your mind's eye kind of see like the Facebook page cracking open or something. Mm-hmm. And then you stick your siphon in there, which he says next, to siphon off the leads.
That's right.
Those words really matter.
Yep. And you can, he says in parentheses, you can legally siphon the best leads from them without spending any money or breaking any of the rules. So not only is this good sales copy, it's actually, you know, this is an example of a press release that he's putting out there. So I can imagine, imagine the interest you know, from any, big podcast name out there that you send a press release, something to this regard. And so as he goes down further, he gives bullets, which are so important. I'm a big fan of bullets and anything from copy to, you know, you do a press release because people only have so much time to read through. And this is actually just a one page thing. So he says, I'll show your audience five ways to hijack leads from big tech companies, including, and then he gives 5 bullets of specific examples, a clever way of getting leads directly from Facebook, Reddit, and Google, who are so in heat to buy, you may not even need a sales funnel to close the funnel.
There's a big promise. I like that.
This is just a great example. We could go through this, and it sounds like great copy, but if you're wanting to build your list, reach out to influencers, but don't just reach out to them and say, you know, here's what I can offer. Here's what I'm doing. Give them something intriguing to build their content around if you're reaching out to them.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
was he like just attaching that press release to his pitch or is he like,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So you don't even have to actually release it as a press release. You can just attach it as a PDF to your email.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. That's cool.
Yep. You just have this in a PDF format and send it out and say, you know, have this on, you know, ready to go. And if you've got a number of these ready to go, you can send out to, people who are content producers. As you and I know, we're always looking for content. We're always looking for topics. And if you can provide something like this, it's amazing.
You'll move right to the...
Yeah.
It's like a really good cover letter for a resume.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right? All the resumes look the same when you kind of look at them. Mm-hmm. But if somebody puts a really good cover letter with a good headline, you know... I've gotten some jobs like that in the past. The cover letter is more, or the email these days, I guess, or whatever is as important as the resume, if not more. Cool. Yeah. So moving on, I sent you an article that actually somebody at the agency sent me today. And I was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
And, it's about Ryan Reynolds, and I didn't realize this, and I knew he was into marketing. I didn't realize he had his own marketing agency.
That's something.
Like the dude's everywhere.
He is. He really is. I mean, he has his own. He has his own whiskey now, right?
Gin.
I'm sorry.
Aviation gin.
Yeah. Aviation. There you go.
And
speaking of aviation, I've got another point on marketing when it comes to niche marketing here later.
All right. So they were talking about how he used to, you know, when he was a actor and he was trying to get started in acting, you know, he's kind of down on marketing, right? Because a lot of people that aren't in marketing don't like marketing, right? So, but then when it came time, you know, he spent like a decade trying to get Deadpool like off the ground, kept running into problems. So when the 20th Century Fox finally got on board, they remained skeptical of Deadpool's potential. So he teamed up with one of the studio's marketing execs, George Dewey, who used to be at an ad agency. And that's when they did the guerrilla campaign that kind of stirred up all the excitement for Deadpool. Deadpool becomes the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time. And so did its sequel. So all of a sudden he's like, oh, marketing's cool.
It works. It's great. I love Mark.
And he's like, everything is storytelling. Mm-hmm. And if you're not paying attention to that, then you're just broadcasting and not engaging.
Right.
So he and Dewey from, they actually started Maximum Effort, which is now mm-hmm. Ryan Reynolds' ad agency. And recently, they obviously had to handle Ryan's aviation gin, and Mint Mobile, because Ryan Reynolds is a owner of Mint Mobile, one of the owners. Mm-hmm. But then they also did a Match.com thing recently, right at the beginning of the year.
Sure.
And it was Satan. The scene opens up. It's Satan. Like, he's flipping through his phone, looking for a date on Tinder or whatever. Right. I guess a match in this case. And it says, you've got a match. And then he meets this girl under a bridge in Central Park. And her name is 2020 or 2020. And, then they do the montage and they're in empty stadiums and a match made in hell. So, and they talk about in this article, he had to pitch that, and Match was like, wait, you want us to talk about Satan and 2020
right.
for our campaign?
Sure.
Two of the most, these topics are not super friendly or whatever.
Right.
So he had to convince them that everybody's already talking about this stuff.
Absolutely. Right?
We're talking about entering the conversation, which we've talked about on this show, plenty of times. So it's like, how do you enter that conversation in a way that's fun and engaging, but not divisive and polarizing? So that's the sweet spot that they look for now. As they look in all their ads, they start looking for what's the big narrative going on, and then how do they quickly insert? And the hotter that is, the quicker you've got to, get in there and have a rebuttal for it. Yeah. So when they did that with Aviation Gin during the Peloton ad, right? So the Peloton ad blew up, back whenever that was, 2019, I guess, November of 2019. And then within, a week or two, he was running an Aviation Gin ad that had the same actress in a bar drinking gin, recovering from, having to work out all the time or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
And, it got billed as one of the best ads of 2019. Mm-hmm. And he said he had to, same thing. He had to convince her because she felt like she was in the middle of a controversy. And here he was wanting to further that.
Sure. Yeah.
And he talked about how he kind of had to do that. So,
yeah,
his main narrative is you got to enter the conversation that's kind of going on around people, but do it in a friendly way that doesn't further divide people.
Sure. In a fun way, a joking way, if you saw that ad, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Cause most people had their impression of 2020 by the end of it, was that this is the worst year ever. And they can't wait to, for 21 to come around.
Yeah.
So,
and it subtly says, there's a match for everybody basically is what it's saying, which is what they want, what you would want a dating app to say. Right.
Absolutely.
So it's just interesting that, this, whether it's the Seth Godin stuff, whether it's, Ryan Reynolds agency, really just tapping into the story and what's going on in people's lives and being less, it's more and more important to get into that instead of trying to force your own view on somebody.
Absolutely.
You got to get into a story that makes sense for them, where they are. And this is not new. It's just, I think more and more people are catching on to it. I mean, really good direct response marketers have been doing this for a long time.
Absolutely.
Right. It's like, John Carlton's one-legged golfer ad, mm-hmm. right? That taps into the story that is going on every weekend in that person's life, that golf is hard. I wish there was a better way to do it. Yeah. Why does it have to be so hard? And then they're thinking that, wish I could outdrive my buddies. Wish I could, all this stuff. Right. Then along comes an ad in their favorite magazine that says one-legged golfer, adds 50 yards to his drive overnight. It's like, oh, That's what I need.
If he can do it, hey.
Yeah.
That's me there. I can do that.
Yeah. But it didn't start out with, you know, a new tailor-made club, you know, with 4-point frictionless driver head or whatever, you know, 13% more aerodynamic with every swing. Like, it didn't say any of that stuff.
No.
Right? It's like, and those still work too, because that's such a red hot market. Mm-hmm. People are always looking to improve.
Sure.
But the story is more
engaging. They're all competing in that same, you know, they're all using that same space to talk about features and benefits.
Yeah.
Instead of telling a story like this. I mean,
right.
So it's not only is it enter the conversation or enter the mind of what they're already thinking about, but it also, like, it you know, we talk about that, you know, it creates that, I gotta learn more, you know, because there's like a one-legged golfer, you know.
Yeah. How does that even work?
How is he swinging with one leg? You know, because it requires, if you've ever played golf, you know, you gotta need both legs.
Some guys I've played with, like, they could use, you know, four legs the way they swing. It's like, man, it's all over the place. But yeah, so I mean, story, you know, we keep coming back to it over and over. Mm-hmm. But learning to tell stories is just, it's becoming more and more necessary, not just like a good way to do it. It's becoming really the only way left to get into people's worlds.
Yeah. And I think that's so important. Like, changing minds is so difficult. Like, changing somebody's mind instead of, you know, going with, you know, following the path of least resistance, which is, you know, entering where they already are. Right.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to change their minds. So,
yeah. Yep. And then you just kind of tie your products, you know, subtly to
absolutely
to that problem.
Yep.
You know, and with that said, like, you're not going to be able to help everybody.
No, of course not.
So you got to find that minimum viable market and and then go expand out from there.
Yep.
So you're going to say something about aviation.
Yeah. So that's a good, actually, without even knowing it, Sean, that's a great lead in. Find that market, you know, that niche market. So, so I'm working with a company in doing some podcast coaching this week. That is a financial planning company, but their niche market right now, and this is a lesson to everyone, because it reminds me of a book. Tom Stanley years ago wrote a book called The Millionaire Next Door, one of the most popular books ever. Then he did, I think, The Millionaire Mind. One that's rarely talked about is one called Networking with Millionaires, which is fabulous. And I don't even know if there's a book. I think it's mostly on Audible, but you can find, I think if you go to audible.com, you can actually find it if you go Networking with Millionaires. But he talks about the, you know, the guy, the one financial, and in this example, he talked about, it was a financial, I think it was a financial planner or someone in the financial investing industry. And he had all of these people from different industries and backgrounds as his clients, and it was difficult. And what he realized was the best way to make things easier on himself and his business is to really be an expert in one field, in one industry. So of all industries, I don't know how he came about it, but it was like he ended up in like the food service industry of all things. And he started attending their trade shows. He started reading their newsletters, their trade journals, right? I mean, and this is, I mean, he had no experience in the food industry whatsoever, but yet he kind of just immersed himself, became knowledgeable of that industry. And ultimately, you know, and showing up at their trade shows and their events, you know, the guys would ask him questions and conversation would come up like, well, who are you and what do you do? And, you know, and he's a financial planner. And so they're like, why the hell are you here? He's just like, because I want to be an advocate, right? I want to be an advocate for this, or apostle for this industry, you know, help your industry. And so he did. And, you know, I think about that with this, the client that I'm working with now, or I've worked with, who is a financial planner, but they focused on the aviation market and they're doing quite well in the aviation industry. And they're actually, they're building their podcast now. They've never podcasted, so they reached out to me. So I'm doing some podcast coaching with them. But I just thought it was really cool. You know, like, that's an area, obviously, you know, there's a number of things working there that they, you could unpack, but there's obviously there's a market with a trait, you know, that's a huge following. People love to fly. Typically, people that fly, you know, have a lot of money, right? I mean, it's pretty expensive to fly. A lot of these people own Cessnas, and, you know, if not own them, they lease them. It's a lot of, you know, financially speaking, you know, if you fly on your own, if you have a pilot's license, you probably are pretty financially well off. So that's a niche market that they have really targeted and honed in on. And now they're creating kind of a podcast, you know, within that industry in and of itself, and then targeting, I guess, a lot of their trade journals and trade organizations. And so it's really cool, because it's like, you know, in marketing, you can go broad, but like you said earlier, you want to go, I think the strategy in anything is to start small and then work your way out, you know, instead of trying to be everything, you know, from the,
and you can either niche, and this is something that I think people lose on niching. There's basically three ways to niche, I guess. You can niche in a segment or a sector like aviation.
Right.
You can niche in a service or product of some kind. So for instance, as a copywriter, I could niche in aviation copy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or I could niche in email copy. Mm-hmm. So the type of stuff that I'm offering is niched, right? Instead of, but I may offer email copy to anybody. Mm-hmm. Or I could, the third option is to do both, which is write email copy for aviation companies.
Absolutely.
Which is scares most people to death, because that double niching feels like you would really limit yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But if it's a done for you type business, mm-hmm. That third option is probably going to be your easiest.
Sure.
It's a little harder to get started sometimes, you know, you kind of got that catch 22 if you don't have proof and customers, but once you get rolling, you know, the industry, you already subscribed to the trade journals. Mm-hmm. Like you know, the lingo. Mm-hmm. So every project gets a little easier. You know, and you become the guy, and people just refer you out.
Right.
The challenge sometimes in that is, you know, you're writing for very similar people, mm-hmm. and coming up with new ideas can be difficult when you're that niched.
Absolutely.
So that's where I disagree a little bit with niching, but I would say that I do agree that a lot of the specialists that make the most money, are niched.
Yeah.
I think you also have to know your personality. You know, Tim Ferriss talks all the time about being a generalist he thinks is more important these days than being a specialist.
Absolutely.
So, but I think from a marketing, if you're talking marketing, I think niching is important.
I used to have this idea that you had to know everything about the market that you were niching in.
Yeah.
I realize that's not the case, because what you can do is, like in the case of like what I've done for years in podcasting, even though I have a background in composites, is to bring experts in and introduce mm-hmm. them, because there's something that happens when you have a podcast and you interview someone, you're naturally tied to, people associate you with as being an expert, even though you're always bringing in people, you know, experts that you're interviewing and talking to, you know, and,
I mean, look at Larry King or exactly. Oprah or,
they built their credibility off the backs of, basically other people, right? Just talking and interviewing, asking questions. Right.
Yeah, Oprah becomes a celebrity by interviewing celebrities.
Exactly.
You know? And now she's got her own network, literally own network.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy. Like, and she never really, I don't want to say she didn't do anything, but she, like, her skill was finding people and interviewing and doing great interviews and all that. Just like, you know, Barbara Walters and mm-hmm. a lot of the other famous people of those times. Yeah. I mean, even Ellen, you know, a more recent example,
absolutely.
You know, she was a stand-up comic,
right?
But then she got into TV and she became, you know, pretty good at interviewing, and she became more of a celebrity by interviewing celebrities than she ever was as a comic.
Right. Absolutely. So, yeah. And I find that what happens is because you interview these experts and you build that, you kind of build that niche following within that industry, especially in podcasting, I think people pay, people still pay more for experts, right? Mm-hmm. People still pay more for people in kind of niche areas. Like you think about the heart surgeon versus a generalist, a general doctor.
Yeah.
What are you going to pay more for? The eye surgeon who specializes in, just eye surgeries and things like that, or a skin physician or whatever. You think about all those, you're always going to pay more for the specialist than you are the generalist. Yep. And that goes especially true, I found, in podcasting, because I've been podcasting for so many years, and it's easy for me to sell basically market advertising and sponsorships on my shows when people know their niche markets, because they're automatically like, yeah, we want to pay money for that. That's a no-brainer.
And there's fewer choices in a niche market, right?
Exactly.
As far as where to advertise. Like, right. You've got a trade journal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Maybe some trade shows, which don't exist anymore for the most part.
Nope.
So, like, you're really limited if you want to reach that market. It's either direct mail, mm-hmm. a trade journal.
Right.
Maybe if you're lucky, you could find an email list, but then you get into all those issues with compliance and everything else.
Right. And you can charge a lot of money.
Advertise on somebody else's site, which is probably not going to work. Right. So it's the more niche, then the more valuable every platform in that niche becomes.
Exactly. Yep. What's that old saying, Sean? There's riches and niches.
So there's riches in the niches.
In the niches. So
yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Put some riches in your britches with niches.
With niches. Well, we've covered a lot. And again, you can find us over at Persuasion by the Pint on all of your podcast platforms. Stitcher Radio, iHeart, and so on. We'll see you guys on the next episode.
See ya.